From the high desert, great American Southwest, this is something called Midnight in the Desert. It's wonderful to be here. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be in the good Lord's 25 time zones. You are welcome. My name is Art Bell. The rules of our show are simple. Two of them only until Friday. Thursday rules, no bad language at all, and only one call per show. No bad language, one call per show. Well, okay, I've got a number of things to open up with here. And I guess I'm going to open up with, it. You know, what happened last night was so bizarre. We had a very bizarre story on, of course. It was a virtual horror story of this lady's 6 years of haunting. Or being demonized, really. And in the middle of the show, I don't know where it was in the show, she was talking, I was listening. That means the speakers are not on. When I have the mic on, it automatically mutes the studio speakers, right? So, no noise, except my talking and my guest in my ear. And I look over 18 inches to my right, and here's this... actually kind of cute little brown mouse. Now, it's just sitting there, staring at me. And I'm looking him back in the eyes. I guess it's a her. I've come up with a name. Her name is Abby Normal. It was going to be just Abby, but Abby Normal did seem more appropriate. Anyway, I turned my left to get a camera to take a picture, and of course she was gone when I turned back around. But why would a little mouse stare, come right up that close to a human being, a much bigger animal, and just sit there and stare? It really creeped me out. And then, of course, the guest I had started talking about in her house she had, and by the way, I checked with my producer on this. She didn't just cook this up. It was just a couple of minutes later she said, yes, we had rats that would hang upside down and stare at us when we were in the room. And I went, oh, God. And I checked with my producer, and Heather said, oh, yeah, she covered the rats staring at her in the pre-show talk. So it was real. I guess she just had to choose that moment. Odd stuff. And then that was followed by, and I don't think there is any relationship whatsoever, because everybody will call that, I know. But last night, went home, talked with my producer, we always do after the show, read a little bit of a brand new book I've got, and went to bed. And I did not get to sleep. Now, I would normally go to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning, and I would sleep till 12 or 1 in the afternoon. That's my day. So, sleep didn't come. I mean, I did a lot. I did melatonin. I did some over-the-counter sleep stuff that just makes you feel sleepy, 5 milligrams of Valium. I tried it all. I didn't sleep. And finally, by 11 o'clock this morning, I woke up. Woke up is the wrong word. Gave up is the right word. And said, hell with this. I'm obviously not going to sleep. I should have done it a long time ago. But instead, I, you know, turned this way and turned that way. You know how that goes. And so I had aches and pains from turning around all night. So up at 11, hadn't had 1 minute of sleep, and I thought, I'm doomed for tonight. I'll never be here. Fortunately, I had about a three-hour nap this afternoon, which will probably screw me up totally for tonight. I'm hoping tonight I sleep. Normally I do, you know. It's really strange. Nothing was on my mind, nothing bugging me, none of that. Just body didn't want to sleep. Absolutely did not want to fall into a sleep state. NASA has made an announcement, a big one too, or maybe not so big really. I guess we all knew this. NASA's Mars orbiting MAVEN spacecraft has discovered that the sun likely robbed the red planet of its once thick atmosphere and water. On about 100 grams, it takes about 100 grams of atmospheric gas every second. That would be about a quarter pound. A quarter pound a second goes out. That's a fair amount, right, of charged particles shooting away from the sun, about a million miles per hour, 1.61 million kilometers per hour, if you care. Now, big solar storms traveling at twice that speed increase the escape rate of the atmosphere 10 to 20 times and more. Because of their prevalence, ancient Mars was once like Earth. It was a basically moist, warm place, capable of microscopic life to the old dry desert of today. So the sun ruined Mars, is what NASA is saying. I don't think any of us are surprised by that. Was there once a civilization there? We don't know. No, we have no idea. And one more word about Abby Normal, my house mouse. I now have on the same piece of equipment where Abby Normal came last night and sat and stared at me in a sort of a otherworldly way, I've got a piece of bread with peanut butter on it, and I'm wafting the scent of the peanut butter toward the back of the room. For all I know, Abby could be in another room by now, but I'm going to be watching all night. I was tempted to have a mouse cam, but staring at something for several hours waiting for a mouse is just plain stupid. So if she comes, I'll attempt a picture again. 5 days after a Russian jetliner broke apart high above Sinai, Russia and Egypt on Thursday dismissed Western suggestions that a terrorist bomb may have caused the crash that killed 224 people. And I told you yesterday, I went through it. CNN said crash, 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 when we would normally say don't speculate until we know. But they sure are still doing it today. New scientific analysis shows the fingerprints of man-made climate change on 14 extreme weather events in 2014. I know a lot of you are going, oh, come on, not this again. From the AP, hitting every continent but Antarctica across the world, they looked at 28 strange weather conditions last year to see if global warming could be the villain. And it turns out that, yes, they say, climate change fingerprints on Hawaii's tropical cyclones, remember those? The heat in Argentina that killed so many, Europe, South Korea, China, and repeatedly, of course, in Australia, where it really, really, really was hot. Now, tonight, this is going to be a very, very interesting program. My guest is Gregory Paxson. And I think it's a show about reincarnation. It almost has to be. It's a show about past life regression. Gregory began his practice in past life regression in Chicago of 1977. Over the last 38 years, he has conducted over 13,000 past life regressions with 3,500 clients. His goal has been reducing pain, confusion, and raising the quality of life of his clients. In other words, he helps people. The past life regressions, guided with care for clarity and objectivity, have yielded a substantial, as you can imagine, body of research. This many, right? Greg holds the conviction that our human nature is naturally able to retrieve skills, ability, and wisdom from past lives. Now, this is going to be particularly interesting because I don't see how you can talk about regression into a past life without talking about reincarnation, which is something that has fascinated me for a long time. So coming up in a moment, Gregory Paxson, past life regressions, and I say reincarnation. We'll see what he says. That sax goes right to my heart.
Walk on the wild side of midnight. From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
Saxophone actually goes right to my soul, I think. There's one more tiny item, and that is this. Bruce, I won't put your last name on the air, sent me an email, and he said, solution to setting our clocks back and forth an hour in the spring, in the fall. Art, I think we should petition the government to push the clocks ahead next spring, but only half an hour, and then leave the darn things alone. To effectively stop this ridiculous ritual of moving the clocks ahead or back an hour each spring and fall. Right, Bruce? I could not be more with you. I've done lectures on this every year. It was last weekend, the weekend of horror with clocks. It's insane that we keep doing this. We can't really go to the half hour. That would be hard for a lot of things. Broadcast and just everything, it would be hard. Everything would have to start on the half hour, I think. But if we would just go, I'd be satisfied with it either way. I think permanent daylight savings would be in order, and it should be done soon. Maybe if we get the right president in office, he will stop this insanity, this annual insanity. And having said that, didn't get to make my usual gigantic rant against it that I do. Let's bring on Gregory Paxson. Hello there, my friend.
Howdy, Art.
Howdy. So that everybody knows, you're in, tell them where you are.
I'm in Chicago.
Chicago. Okay.
That's where I work. I live in St. Joe, Michigan.
Okay. Nothing wrong with Chicago. It's a great place.
Are you kidding? It's a great place. Emphasis on the great.
Yes, been there, enjoyed Chicago. All right, so we're here to talk about, I don't even know where to start with you. 38 years of research, and I at first thought you had done no media at all. My producer told me just before airtime that many years ago, I guess in the 80s, you were on with Oprah. Is that correct?
Oh, that's true.
Okay, so you've had a little media experience.
A little.
Okay.
It's for me, it's a kind of strange thing, but I have to say I really enjoy doing it.
Okay, so you have taken back 3,500 clients in 13,000 past life regressions. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's astounding. Absolutely astounding. Here's how I first heard of it, Gregory. I had a couple of doctors on who it was not their intention to go into past lives. And they began regressing people for, I guess, some medical reason, you know, to try to help them with something or another, smoking, whatever. And they accidentally, I guess, suddenly took them back too far and, bingo, into another life. And I found that astounding to hear, you know, from a doctor. But I did. And I've heard it now from two or three doctors. So I know it's real. And you obviously really know it's real, I guess, right?
I do. And the story of the doctor taking somebody back through hypnosis of one form or another to the source of a symptomatic problem that usually just as they've been treating it for a while and they're not getting anywhere.
Right.
And somebody starts describing a scene that's taking place clearly in some other time and some other place. And they have this experience of they have a patient talking about a past incarnation, talking about a past life, and whether the doctor likes it or not, after that session is over, the patient's big problem seems to go away. And that story is kind of I think the term is a chestnut, famously described by Brian Weiss in Many Lives, Many Masters, also by an old teacher of mine, Dr. Helen Wambach, who wrote Past Lives, The Evidence Under Hypnosis, published back in the 70s. Morris Netherton, another early past life regression therapist, and any number of other authors who describe that phenomena, almost as though the fact that they're doctors in the first place, they didn't believe in it in the second place, and they happened to do this by accident in the third place, makes the story credible, and I suppose that's all true.
All right. Can you really talk about past life regression without bumping into reincarnation? You really can't, right?
I can't imagine how you would do that.
Nor can I.
Really.
It's
impossible. And, you know, reincarnation as a way of seeing life, I don't much care for the word belief, is common to most of the population of the world, who are Hindus, who are Buddhists, who are Inuit or Eskimos. Most of the cultures throughout human history have included reincarnation in their idea of how life works.
So the truth is, numerically, we are, meaning in the West here, maybe in the U.S., other few other parts of the world, we're actually in a minority, numbers-wise, regarding belief.
Yes, I don't know that means anything, but actually in mystical Christianity, in mystical Judaism, we call it Kabbalah, in mystical Islam, for example, the Sufis, all hold the belief in reincarnation.
I actually heard that reincarnation at one time was in the Bible.
There's one vague reference to it. It's a situation in which John the Baptist comes to visit Jesus. And after he leaves, the apostles around Jesus say, "Who is that guy?" And Jesus says something like, "Among those of heaven, he is the least. Among those of men, he is the greatest. This was Elias, who was for to come."
Oh, was for to come.
Elias is the Greek for Elijah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you a licensed, or do you get a license as a hypnotist?
There is no such thing. There are professional organizations that certify hypnotists.
Okay.
I'm kind of rebellious. I do not have a piece of paper.
That's fine.
And I have looked at the process, and no matter what it is, whether it's a license, a certification as a hypnotist, or a license as a psychotherapist, which in my state in Illinois was not necessary until 1998. Okay. Illinois was the last free state for free-thinking therapists.
Wow.
At any rate, when I look at the requirements and the hoops I'm supposed to jump through, I don't know whether to feel embarrassed or offended. They don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you're actually about my age. You're 70, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So you did this for many, many, many years.
Yes.
And you're still doing it now, or have you stopped?
I guess I would say I'm semi-retired. I'm still doing it now. I'm certainly not doing it at the pace I was for most of those years.
Sure. Well, you must have learned a lot in all those years.
I have, and it's been an incredible adventure. When I chose to spend my life doing past life regression, at least in Chicago back in 77, people weren't exactly pounding on my door asking me to regress them. But I had this conviction, going back to my 20s, that there was a way for people in pain to feel better faster than the kind of ordinary therapy that I'd been going through. And I
sure get it. I mean, the reason for all of this is to fix real-world problems.
Absolutely. This is not speculative. People don't pay me just for the hell of it.
Of course.
I mean, some people are really curious about reincarnation, as I was when I first got regressed myself back in my 20s.
Me too. Me too, big time. Very interesting.
You know, just like that whole aspect of how does life work? Where are we in relation to any larger line of purpose?
Yeah, where is a bigger question ultimately than that? There is none. That is the big one.
As a being, you know, what is the nature of my existence and what is it for? Is it, well, first, my first question was, is my being for anything in particular? You know, an existentialist, which I guess I was at the time, would say that life is absurd. And we find purpose by saying, nevertheless, I shall live as fully as possible.
Mm. Yeah, that
and
makes sense.
Once a person goes through that passage, then they're actually prepared to consider something bigger. Because they've freed themselves from whatever religious programming they might have grown up with.
Well, when you say that, of course, it puts hackles up a lot of backs out there, right?
Well, that's okay with me. If that's a problem for you.
No.
I happen to be raised by parents who were not religious. We lived in a house on Lake Michigan, surrounded with woods, so no one could see us not going to church. And I didn't see anybody going to church, so I really didn't think about it very much.
So you were unchurched.
I was unchurched, and my experiences in church are mostly funerals and weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And a few curiosities. You know, I attended High Mass at Christmas with a relative who had to show up.
Oh.
And that was fascinating. I mean, as a hypnotist, watching this process, you know, with the swinging scepter and the incense and the call and response with the congregation in which people are repeating the words, I am a sinner. And, you know,
yes.
The most powerful form of suggestion is not hypnotic trance.
Yes.
It's repetition.
Yeah, so you saw.
So
imagine
somebody growing up. If I'd been saying that repeatedly all my life, as long as I could remember, I wonder what that would do for me subconsciously.
So you saw your own work there, really?
Of course. I mean, any religious process, because religion is a social process,
yes,
that has to be bound together and held together as a social organism if it's going to succeed to continue through the generations and have real substance.
Makes sense.
And it has a lot of value for people because people need a social connection around something that joins them together no matter what their station in life is.
All right, so...
But we're way off of reincarnation now, aren't we?
We are, and we'll come back to it, not to worry. I'm going to drag you back to it. I want to know is how you really... I mean, tell me about the first time that you took somebody into a hypnotic state and then into another life. That must have been, you know, to do that for the first time must have been something you'll never forget?
Actually, I did.
Forget it?
I had an experience in Colorado that involved simply stopping to visit some friends. I spent the night. We got up in the morning. They suggested we ski out somewhere and have lunch. And I said, great, I'd never been on skis before. The snow turned out to be patchy, but we found a pretty big hill with plenty of snow on it. So I put the skis on. I asked my friend Lisa what to do with those little straps on the poles because I had no idea. And I'm not athletic. But once I got the skis on and the poles in my hands, something clicked. A voice in my head said, it's great to be back on skis again. And I had this feeling of a presence with me that I recognized as my last incarnation. And I took the poles and I pushed off the hill, the edge of the hill, and my body went into the crouch and I knew how to shift my weight and I skied down the hill and made it through the one opening in all the saplings at the bottom of the hill.
Wow.
While my friends were screaming from the top of the hill, you lied. You said you'd never skied before.
You said you felt a presence. You said you felt a presence with you.
Yes.
Now, that feeling of presence being with you, that's not actually a sort of a spirit hanging out with you. It's, I presume, that reincarnation that's in your brain, and you felt this was a mental feeling more than a feeling of true adjacency. Although, I guess it could have felt like that.
Well, in therapy language, it was like a felt sense, except that it was outside of my head and over to the right. But it was something I recognized immediately. You know, this is many years after I was first aggressed. But I'd never had the experience of doing something, especially something physical, that I had no idea how to do, and doing it reasonably well.
Okay. All right.
Hold that was it right impossible, there. And it happened.
Hold it right there. We've got that break I told you about coming up. This is going to be an interesting night, I guarantee you. This man has had 3,500 clients and done 13,000 past life regressions. And this man's name is Gregory Paxson. I'm Art Bell, Midnight in the Desert.
Packets. Then, with a smile on your face, please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
A lot of times people are sort of only half listening. And when Ross says that, I get emails. They say, Sniffar, what? I get a lot of emails about that. Our packets. Packets are things that go out on the Internet. I'm sorry, but it is funny. And so is that commercial. Okay. A quick little note from Allison in Rhode Island, Art. You have christened the KIC star Abby. I did by mistake, Allison. Shouldn't it be Tabby? Or Tabby? Yes, it is Tabby, actually. That's why when the mouse came up last night, I called it Abby. And then somebody corrected me and said it should be Abby Normal. And certainly that mouse acted abnormal, so yeah, it's abnormal. And I'm wafting this peanut butter smell all over the room, so I'm sure abnormal's going nuts out there somewhere, if she's even in the same room now. When do mice ever do that? Not in this lifetime. Anyway, speaking of lifetimes, that's what we're talking about. This is going to be a really, really interesting show. Gregory Paxson is here. His life's work has been regressions and proof of prior lives. And so I've got a few questions I'd like to ask if I can, because nobody has ever done as many as you have done, Gregory. So Sorry,
is that,
but I'm...
Is that true? I have no idea.
No, nobody's even close.
But before we get into the questions, just to wrap up what I was talking about before the break.
Yes.
In remembering how to ski from a past life, something that is really improbable for me, it awakened me to the idea that it's possible for human beings to remember skills and abilities from past lives and use them in their current life, pretty much like a download.
So,
By the time I got back to Chicago, I really had to know, and I started regressing volunteers or asking people to get regressed. But the first time I remember being really shocked involved a regression with a young guy, probably in his middle 20s.
All right, hold that story. Hold on to that story. Hold it. Stop.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Apparently, you're having a hard time hearing me when I'm trying to make it a conversation. That could be a function. It could be a function of Skype. I'm not sure.
Go ahead.
So, what I didn't get is, certainly your first experience was fascinating, and I understand why you then went from that point. My question was going to be, apparently you were what, already a hypnotist? I mean, what was, you don't just suddenly become a hypnotist overnight and start taking people back into prior lives. So when did you become a hypnotist?
Oh, no, I do everything backwards.
That's fine.
I studied hypnosis after I'd been regressing people for about 6 months.
What?
And then I took the formal training in hypnosis, and I apprenticed with a hypnotist for some time.
I don't understand. You began hypnotizing people?
Well, I'm pretty good at that stuff.
I get it, and I know. I've studied it myself. It takes a specific kind of personality and strength and so forth and so on, and you have to establish certain things before. So I did a lot of reading about hypnosis. I know something about it myself, and that's what you did?
I basically used a technique that had been used with me to regress me. I remembered it, and I used it.
Okay.
I was just asking different questions because I knew that past life therapy was around, but it was all focused on people's symptoms. And I was interested in what they could bring out that they was like a strength or a gift or a skill that they could use.
Sure.
The process of hypnotizing somebody is something a 10-year-old can read out of a book. The problem isn't how do you get somebody in trance. That's easy. The question is, what do you ask them to do once they're in trance? That's the hard part. And that is something most people don't understand.
I've never been able to be hypnotized, Gregory, so I don't know that it's easy for all. I know it's easy for some people. Some people are virtual, you know, setups for it. I mean, they're just ready.
Oh, sure. I mean, in American hypnosis, there are 6 different levels of trance, and most people can't go into the bottom 2 levels.
The bottom 2?
The bottom 2 levels are positive and negative hallucination. A positive hallucination is if I suggest to you that someone is sitting in the chair across from you and you're really glad to see them and you're having a conversation, and you will have a conversation with an empty chair. And negative hallucination, which I experimented with in my training, I was able to suggest to a lovely young woman that she was looking over at the chair across from her and thought it would be and saw that it was empty and it would be a lot more comfortable than the one she was sitting in, and then she came and sat on my lap like nothing was happening. So a negative hallucination is when the suggestion is that you will not see something that is in front of you.
Gregory, the ethics of that.
I was a young man taking a class. What's your problem?
No problem. I know that's what everybody's going to say out there, and what else did he do?
Look, there were a lot of people around in that classroom, so
yeah.
People out there are going to say almost anything.
I know. Trust me.
All I can do is be amused.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, life is supposed to be fun, and most of it is funny.
Yep. No, I'm with you all the way. So she sat on your lap. That's pretty cool, actually.
Not for very long. And after she was out of trance, I asked her about it. And she said, well, you know, I kind of knew you were there, but the suggestion seemed more appealing to me than anything else. I sat down in the chair, and your lap was kind of in the way.
I see.
Now,
fascinating.
Well, this is not really what we're here to talk about.
No, but... no. I don't care. I want to hear about it. I love the idea of hypnosis. I've never been hypnotized. Many have tried, Gregory. Nobody's ever succeeded. I'm one of those people.
Well, there are some people like that. They're actually very rare. Out of, 100 first regressions with clients, about 5 people can't get into a past life. So that's 5%. And when they come back for the second session, usually about 5% of that group can't be regressed. So now we're down to a fraction of a percent. But there are people I have not been able to hypnotize out of all those people. But, we're talking a very small percentage. The real question is, do you want to be hypnotized or not?
At some level, yes, and at some level, no. In other words, I can't give up that much control. I just can't do it.
This may sound strange to you, but I found some of the easiest clients to work with were the military officers and retired military officers I've worked with, men who commanded men in battle, who sent men into battle, knowing that some of them wouldn't come back. One of them was a 3-star general who had flown fighter planes in 3 wars.
Right.
And had been the guy who carried the football for the president for some time.
Oh, my. Okay, well,
and
I get it.
These men have established their strength in a way that they can follow instructions, which is all it takes to go into trance, and are complete. I mean, they proved everything that a man could prove. They have nothing left to prove, and they're completely open. They're some of the most wonderful people for me to work with I've ever worked with, and it blows every stereotype that people have in their heads.
Well, maybe I didn't have the great Gregory.
Oh, please. Hey, look, Art, if you're an impossible client, you're an impossible client. What can I say?
Sounds like it's better than the amazing, right? There's amazings out there. I get them confused, but they're all kind of unwonderful.
Well, wonderful's a little much for me.
All right, so anyway, back to what you're doing.
The only amazing thing about me is that I can be incredibly silly.
That's fine. Me too. So, has it come to the point, Gregory, where you can say without question, you've done tens of thousands of these things, that reincarnation is the real thing?
Absolutely. There just is no question. The things I've seen happen with my clients in their lives as a result of the regressions, as well as in the sessions themselves, are simply not conceivably possible by any other means.
All right, you might move the microphone a little lower down between your chin and lower lip because you're popping your peas.
Oh, sorry, how's this?
Much better, thank you.
Okay, appreciate that.
So that's quite a statement for you to make. Have you ever seen a movie called I, Origins?
No.
Oh, Gregory, you've got to see it. It's about reincarnation. Write it down. I, Origins.
Okay.
You will absolutely love it. Anyway, and that goes for the audience, too. Everybody, if you can find it, I, Origins. You got to see it. All right, so is it necessary, really, to take people back to prior lives, Gregory, to stop them from smoking or aid them with some pain they have or some habit they want to get rid of or something like that? I wouldn't think it would be that you can use post-hypnotic suggestion to help a lot of things in the current life, right?
Well, Art, I don't do post-hypnotic suggestions at all.
Everybody says that. Okay.
Let me give you an example.
What do you call it?
I don't work with people on smoking issues because I smoke and I'm very fond of it. However, a rather interesting woman of about 72, still working, a real firecracker of a woman, mentioned to me when she came for regressions that her dentist insisted she stop smoking because it was affecting her gums.
Of course.
She said, I love smoking. I don't want to stop smoking. Maybe you could give me some suggestion. I said, well, no, I don't do that. We did a couple of regressions, and she did them just fine. And in the last one, I suggested that I direct her to go back to the point of origin of her desire to smoke. And she said, okay. And we did a regression. It was so undramatic, I don't remember anything from it. However, I talked to her the next day, and she said she left my office, walked out the door, lit a cigarette, and said, well, I guess that didn't work. The next time she thought of a cigarette was many hours later. As she was about to go to bed, she realized she hadn't had a cigarette since. Over the next year, I checked in on her, and she'd not had a cigarette. She said a lot of her friends smoke, and she's around smoke, but she just doesn't want one anymore. And 2 years later, the same thing was true. She said she did keep a pack around just in case, but it had gotten pretty stale over the last 2 years.
Yeah, bad.
Now, I didn't give her any suggestions. She just experienced what it was that, you know, energized that desire to smoke. It was something from a past life, and once it was gone, once she'd seen it and completed it, the desire went away, and I never gave her a suggestion about smoking at all. So when people, but it illustrates a deeper point. When people can go back to the point of origin of the issue, it changes their relationship to the issue in a way that they no longer identify with it. They don't carry it inside anymore, and it goes away. I'm after a spontaneous healing or, you know, restoration of their well-being, if I can put it that way, through the process itself without adding any of my own ideas or preferences or notions or any kind of suggestion at all. Because if the work is really honest, if it's really hits the bullseye, that's all it takes.
Okay.
And one way I know I hit the bullseye with the session is that the next time I talk to the client, the issue's gone.
Okay. Let me, if I can, ask you, could you give me a short list of the kind of stuff people come to you for?
Sure. Although, you know, I do an initial interview with a client, which is about an hour long, so I can get a medical history, personal history.
Got it.
Do a family diagram, look at their astrological chart, get to know them, and find out, why'd you come to see me?
Mm-hmm.
It's also their opportunity to discover that they think they want to do hypnosis with me or not. So that at the end of that first meeting, they have a choice of yes, go ahead, no, I don't want to, or go home and think about it.
Well, you've got to have a relationship with a person
well,
and understand
absolutely.
About them before you're going to trust them to do that.
Doing hypnosis with people without having a decent relationship is a bad idea for everybody
right.
involved.
Got it.
And I don't want them to be sorry, and I don't want to be sorry. So I will sort those things out.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
At any rate, 40% of the people who come to see me will honestly say they don't really know why they came to see me. They just had a strong feeling they should do it. So in terms of percentages, that's the biggest group.
The word on you, out there on you, is that you do past life regressions. Is that why you think 40% of the... I mean, you know, they knock on the door for some reason, right?
You know what shows up, Al, is, for example, art.
Forgive me. Sorry.
In the first regression, my direction to a client is to allow their higher self to choose the lifetime they're going to. And higher selves are very efficient. They will take the person to the issue most prominent in their life at the time, whether they've recognized it or not.
I so get that. But the question was, is the reason that people come to you because the word got out that you do past life regressions?
I have no idea, frankly. The fact that people know I do past life regressions doesn't necessarily make them come to me and want to do regressions.
Well, I mean, look, they knock on your door or call your phone for some reason, right?
They do, but I think there are reasons of their own. People have told me, you know, I advertised in several places in Chicago. Some people have told me they cut the ad out and carried it around in their wallet for 10 years
really?
Before they felt like calling me.
What did you advertise?
I advertised that I do past life regression.
Thank you. That was the answer to my question. So okay.
I didn't hear that question in your question, but okay.
No, I said, why do people knock on your door or call you? In other words,
I thought you were talking about the personal motivation.
No.
Okay. No, because I advertise.
Past life.
That was advertising was the family business growing up. So you know, I can think about how to do that. But I'd like to do it in a kind of a low key way. And I hope to present some intelligence in whatever advertising I put out. But it's not, you know, it's not heavy-duty marketing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you regress somebody, you're telling me that you never – I asked you for a list of reasons that people come
right.
to you.
Right. I didn't get to it. But,
okay. Let's get to it.
Okay. Relationship issues?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That's a full range of things.
Sure.
Career issues, including people who, by all lights, should be doing well and are not.
Right.
Or salespeople who suddenly aren't closing any deals.
Right.
Or in one case, an extremely successful phone saleswoman who suddenly lost her voice.
Wow.
Awkward.
Awkward. Okay,
she was literally outselling the other 10 people in the office all by herself. She was selling more than all of the rest of them put together, and it was the first job she'd ever had. She'd been a housewife. And then she lost her voice. Curious, hmm?
It is curious. It smacks of psychological, of course.
Well, it smacks of, well, that or, you know, psychological is sort of a present-time view of a karmic situation. Now, the word karma is kicked around an awful lot. But
yeah.
I define it simply as unfinished business. So it could be karma in this life. I mean, unfinished business is the bill you haven't paid. But it's also something that happened in a past life, a decision or a declaration you made in a past life,
uh-huh.
or something that you did or failed to do, or something somebody else did or you did to them, all kinds of ideas of something that was left unfinished that we pick up again in another lifetime. And it will present itself in some usually pretty ordinary way in our life.
All right. We're at a break. So I want to pick up on karma when we get back. It's a really good, 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 good subject. I have a little bit of a different definition of what karma is, but probably in the end it's the same thing. I'm Art Bell. This is Midnight in the Desert.
Midnight in the Desert is a wild trip across the Dazed Divisor. Get your ticket to ride by calling 1-952. Call Art. That's 1-952-225-5278.
Okay, Gregory Paxson is with us. He does past life regressions. Not just a few, 3,500 clients, 13,000 past life regressions. Can you imagine that? So, an amazing guy with a real, very serious wealth of knowledge about, well, past lives and, of course, reincarnation. And we're talking with him, and the word karma came up. Now, to me, karma has always meant, you know, you screw somebody over, you do wrong to somebody, and it's going to come back and bite you right in the butt. Something's going to happen to you. Simple explanation of karma. More complicated, somebody did it in a past life of yours, and it's biting you in the butt. So that's kind of how I think of karma. Is that right or wrong?
I love it. Well, it's that, but a lot more.
Okay.
I mean, butt biting will definitely get you a problem later if it doesn't get you one real quick.
Yeah.
But at any rate... you know, it includes things a lot more complex. It even includes, and this is a really interesting part, it includes the soul path. Souls will choose a path for their spiritual evolution, their development, their growth. for example, if someone chooses the path of engineering and you've worked on the ancient pyramids and you worked on the cathedrals, the medieval cathedrals of Europe, and you worked on the Brooklyn Bridge and you worked on the NASA space project, your capability in consciousness has increased every time.
All right, well...
Now, what that refers to is a decision of the soul to accomplish something that takes more than one lifetime to complete. May take many lifetimes. That's a continuity of our purpose. And among the clients I've worked with, that shows up rather frequently.
Okay, well, here's what I think doesn't show up rather frequently.
Okay.
If a lot of people who are sort of media-oriented in past lives and that sort of thing, inevitably, you know, somebody comes back and says, well, you were, Henry VIII, or you were somebody inevitably famous. Well, the real truth would be, and you've done, so many tens of thousands of these, that more times than not, you must come back as a rather average individual, not a king or not a great conqueror or somebody famous, right?
Right. You're absolutely right. Most past life regressions are stories of ordinary people doing ordinary things.
Thank God.
And there might be some specific event that is hooked to their current problem that occurred during that ordinary life, and that's what we're after.
All right, good. If you'd said otherwise, we'd probably terminated the interview now.
Well, fair enough. Uh-huh. And you should have.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The realist, look, I'm looking for, what's true.
Me too.
And what's true is, through most of our lifetimes, back to reincarnation, if you like, we were illiterate. What we knew was what we learned from the other people in the village. And we might have traveled, 10 miles from the place where we grew up in the course of our lives.
Gotcha.
How much could we possibly know? And, of course, some of the decisions we would make would not work very well, and we would create some karma out of that, uninformed decision.
We didn't know
any better. We didn't have any other choices of what to think about.
Right. Can I ask you a really hard question?
Love it.
It seems to me that if you did past life regressions, if you had the desire to do it, you could obtain details from this person about that life, some sort of detail that could be looked up and proven.
That's so, often the case for clients who care to do it.
Really?
I think one of the person I did the most regressions with, and I think we did 42 over the course of some years,
wow,
was a young woman who was a lawyer who had been remembering flashes from past lives since she was about 5.
Right.
She was an extraordinarily brilliant human being. And after each of our sessions, she would go to Newberry Library, which is a private history research library in Chicago. And she'd come back to our next appointment with 3 to 5 pages of detailed notes that she had checked out from her previous regression.
Wow. So in other words, she proved it to herself.
Well, and to me. And some of this is strange things like she was a sheriff, a tax collector in around the year 1200, which she discovered in her research was a time when they changed bookkeeping systems throughout Europe.
Okay.
And the only people who really had to keep books were tax collectors because, the duke that she worked for,
sure,
or he worked for, definitely wanted to collect his due.
Got it.
But things that you would never think of, and I just cite that as an example. I mean, you could study a lot of history and not know that bookkeeping systems changed around the year 1200 AD.
All right.
So she did this, many, many, many times. Other clients have investigated things on their own, checked things on a map. I had one woman tell me that she and her man came to a workshop, a regression workshop, where I regress a group of people all at once, and had gone out and found the cemetery where this past incarnation had been buried and found the gravestone. You know, there's, you know, I could tell you stories like that for the rest of 2 hours.
I bet you could, but I've got so many questions and so much I want to cover. I mean, we may have another show at some time, at some point, but I want to get through the big stuff here if I can do it.
Sure.
So, when you're doing a past life regression, is it possible for you to be clear and to know that somebody is not making it up?
Yes, and this may sound odd, but there are two ways I can tell, and I use both of them. Part of it is because of the way I guide the regression is I ask questions that are as neutral as possible so that I avoid suggesting an answer.
Right.
I ask people to focus on what they can see and feel. So they're describing things, describing their clothing, describing their surroundings, describing, you know, the next scene when we move forward in time. When people start making it up, they go from nouns to verbs. In other words, instead of describing the physical surroundings as a sort of a basis, a grounding for the regression, they start talking about, well, I did this, and then I did this, and then I did this. And they shift basically from describing things to telling a story without any physical matter in it.
Gotcha.
That's one. The other one is, and this has just always been with me, when people go into regression, I can see everything they see. I check once in a while with a little detailed question so I'm not intruding. You know, maybe I say, look over to the left of that house you're looking at, and they'll say, yeah. And I've already seen a goat over there, and I'll ask him if there's anything over there besides grass. And they'll say, oh, yeah, well, there's a goat.
Okay.
Something like that. So when I can't see it, they're probably making it up because I can't see things that people make up. And I remember the regressions. I just flick on a switch in my head, and it's like a movie rolling in my head, and I just remember the whole thing. I don't have to take notes.
I can hear the ease of control in your voice as you speak, and so I can understand how you're able to do what you do. Very interesting. Okay, so these past life memories, a very important point. Are these memories that are somehow being passed genetically forward? Because, I mean, at birth it's a brand new brain, or is it? I mean, is there something that's stored in that brain from a previous life that you just don't, you know, kind of like a part of a disk drive that you don't access or something? That's the best analogy I can come up with. Or is it genetic, purely genetic?
Well, I know it's not genetic. Because from one lifetime to another, people move from one race to another, one gender to another, one country to somewhere across the world. So it can't be genetic. As for the new brain, we all get a new brain every time we get born. But that gets into the question of, is there a mind, a non-physical mind, as well as a brain? Do we have non-physical parts? I say we do. We have a physical body, an etheric body, an astral body, a mental body, and that's just the three lower bodies, really. And then there's the causal soul and spirit body. So these other elements of our being, the same ones that leave our bodies when we die, and we can get to that conversation later, arrive in our body around just before we're born. So there's a consciousness there in this brand new brain that is a lot more... has a lot more information in it, encoded in it, than the brain could possibly have.
So it is sort of, my little scepter idea is not that far off the mark.
Your scepter idea? What's
scepter,
that?
Scepter of a disk drive. In other words, if you think of our brains, like, you're not an IT kind of guy. I understand that. So
you can tell.
Yeah, I can tell. And I was told by my... producer. So maybe it's a bad analogy, but think of it as a hard drive is where all the information is stored, right? On a
right.
computer. And so there are sometimes sectors that are not used. There's no point in my explaining this. Anyway, sort of a part of the brain.
Actually, if I may.
Yes.
If you think of the soul energy, which is like a ball of light, but it's like contains a lot of information, could be thought of as the hard drive.
Okay.
That lands in the body. It resides more or less in the area of the chest.
Oh, really?
That contains all that information from all those other lifetimes.
All this chakra stuff?
No, it's not chakra. I mean, I'm fine with chakras, but that's not part of that. It's connected but with that system, but it's not part of it.
But it resides not in your brain, but in your chest. What we call the soul?
We call what?
What we call the soul?
Yes, I'm calling it the soul.
Wow. Okay, what an unusual place for it to be. Does it communicate with the brain? I would think it does.
Only if we open up the channels to be able to hear it. And that's where past life regression opens up that conversation with the soul. The soul gently introduces us to the knowledge of earlier lifetimes. It allows us to describe the experience of dying and where we go after we die, which connects us back up to where the soul came from before we were born.
All right. May I ask a question now? When you're taking somebody back, Gregory, do you take them back slowly? I mean, take me as an example. I'm 70, right?
All right.
So you would have, I would think that you would have to work me back then through my childhood and through my formative years, and then I suppose I'm sucking on a bottle or something or another, and then pop, I'm somewhere else. Is that how it works?
Thanks for asking. Some people do that. It's called age regression.
Yes.
When I first started doing regression, I did a variation on that. But I'm impatient, and I don't want to get into people's childhood issues right off the bat. So what I do is simply give suggestions that people kind of go with me into a cave and then into a tunnel of light and back into a past life. And when I say they're they're there.
Oh, my. It can be done that quickly. I say it can be done that quickly, or is that something you work up to after you've had them under several times?
Well, no. First session.
Wow.
It should be, look, this should be a natural ability. It should be easy. It's just a matter of preparing people properly. I'm reminded of a client who told me she'd been to two or three regressionists before she came to me and had no success. And I did the usual thing after I met her with her initially and gave her a recorded hypnotic induction to practice with. I made it particularly for people to practice relaxing and going into trance and waking up again so that you get familiar with it. Look, being hypnotized is like learning how to meditate. It's something you get better at with practice. It's intentional.
Right.
If you want to be hypnotized, you can learn how to do it. And often, for some people, that's a lot more comfortable because when you're listening to a recording, there's no ego competition or issues if you're too strong or too strong-minded or something like that, because that's ridiculous if you're arguing with a recording in your own mind.
Right.
Then before the first regression, I spend probably an hour talking to people, getting them kind of calmed down and getting over their excitement and or fear and actually trying to bore them to the point where they're ready to be regressed. But also I'm telling very specifically, I'm going to do these things and this is how I want you to respond to that. When I ask you a question, just tell me the first thing that comes into your head. If you start editing, things will stop coming into your head.
So are you sometimes so boring that you look over at the person and, oh, my God, they're already in a trance?
It happens. That's what I call starting without me. But, be that as it may.
You do have that quality in your voice. And,
am I successfully boring you?
No, it's a kind of a reserved, soft power. I can hear it, and I think probably people listening tonight can hear it, too. So,
okay.
I completely understand.
The idea is if people are prepared properly, and so this woman who'd been to three regressionists and couldn't get regressed, and I did the first regression with her, and she did fine. It was strange and wonderful, but she did great. And after the session was over, she remarked to me that nobody else had done the kind of preparation with her that I'd done.
Right.
So that makes a difference. You know, a lot of elements make a difference. Preparation is one. The quality of the personality and character of the person who's guiding their regression is really important. And one of the hardest things for people to learn if they're guiding regressions is how to ask questions that avoid suggestion.
Right.
Questions that, because people in trance hear the language a little differently. So if I'm guiding you through a regression and you've described, you know, your body and your clothing and some other things that I've asked you, at some point I would want to ask you what your name is.
Right.
I would not say, what's your name? I would say, what would you like me to call you?
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't ask how old you are. I'd say, how many years do you have? People can respond easily to those questions, whereas what's your name or how old are you has an element of challenge in it that has just a little sandpaper to it that I want to get around.
Very interesting.
So there's subtleties like that, but it's also an element of judgment. If I have any judgment at all of someone, and this is one of the things I tell clients initially, I'm not in the judgment business.
Uh-huh.
I'm not judging your personality, your character, your station in life, or your level of spiritual attainment, or anything else. I just want to get the story, and I just want to understand what you're looking at.
All right.
And that has to be, but that really has to be genuine, you know. I mean, it took me a couple of years at least to realize that that really, any feeling of judgment, and people are really sensitive to that, has to be gone from me.
All right. Well, I totally get it. All right. So here comes another question. When you've got somebody under and you take them through the tunnel, I think you said, or
yes,
whatever, and they're suddenly in another life, how can you know, I mean, at what point in this other life are you likely to end up? We're talking now about a person's lifetime.
Right.
So do you plop down in the middle of their life, the end of their life, the beginning, or any of the above?
Any of the above. Look, I trust people's consciousness in a way, and on an unconscious level, there is a knowing. So they may arrive at any age, and I start asking questions, and I'm looking for what's important here.
Sure.
So I'm playing detective through the whole thing.
Sure.
And so my curiosity has to be, you know, at a high level, and I'm listening for, you know, there's a purpose for this, but I'm not quite sure what it is, if their higher self has chosen where they're going. So I keep looking for, like, events of a major change, most of all.
Do they frequently, Gregory, arrive at the appropriate place? And by that I mean, you know, they came to you for a reason. So if there is another life they're going to go in, does their own mind or the other or the previous life guide that person when you take them under and take them through to about the right place to deal with the reason that they came to you?
Generally, no.
Oh. So you've got to... Oh, so... So what do you do to get to the appropriate place? Let's say you've got somebody back in another lifetime.
Right.
How do you get them to the appropriate place? How do you do that?
Well, I kind of hunt around. Now, I think any therapist would tell you, when people have a problem they want to address and they want to, you know, get over, basically. They want it out of their life, or at least calm it down a lot.
Right.
There's a certain inner resistance to actually meeting up with it. So it's a combination of a desire to confront it and an inner motivation to some degree avoid it.
I gotcha.
So that's a dance. And it works with past incarnations, too. So, but more than that, I want to get a story of the person's life a bit, so there's some context. So when the man stands over his wife's grave and says, I'll never love another woman again, it's important to know that he's an old woodsman. When his wife dies, he has, you know, he lives in poverty. He's old and doesn't look very pretty. And when he says he's never going to love another woman again, it makes a lot of sense. Chances are very, very slight he would do that.
Right.
He would ever love. So my client, who... has had an inexplicable inability to have a relationship with a woman that lasted. Well,
uh-huh.
That's where that declaration will stick with you. And that's an element of karma that's powerful and neglected.
Wow.
Because it's something we declare with a lot of emotion and say those words, and then I can ask, you know, would you like to keep that being true, or would you like to change it? And in that moment, they can change the words, and the whole trauma is nullified.
I so understand all of a sudden, right?
And it's so easy, you know. People do not have to repeat a traumatic experience over and over until it goes away, which is what most people do. They just have to change the declaration they made. So I'll ask people, did you say anything to yourself about yourself or about life or about God? Yes or no?
Right.
If the answer is yes, tell me the words you're saying. And then I want to make the least change in it I can that will get the effect I want, because I don't want to manipulate it. But I do want the person to be free from a declaration they claimed in another life that will pop up
Here's a question for you. Let's take your example.
Mm-hmm.
The man says, I'll never love another woman. And in fact, that's very powerful, very emotional, and it is now carried forward to the current life. And this is what we're trying to cure. So at this point, when you're asking, do you want this to continue to be true? Who are you asking, Gregory? Are you asking Who are you asking?
Yeah. There's a split consciousness. I know this from being regressed a lot of times myself. Part of me knows I'm in the room, but a bigger part of me is really engaged in that experience or that past personality.
Right.
So when I ask that question, in a way, I'm asking each one of them.
Huh. Okay. Okay, and I guess the one whose wife died and made that declaration wouldn't, even if asked, wouldn't want to change it unless he figured out that, oh, gee, I screwed up the life of the next one.
It doesn't seem to be even that complicated, but it seems to work just fine. I mean, that's a great question, Art, but the answer I'm giving you, I think, is probably about as good as I'm going to get.
Okay. All right. I'm good with that. What fascinating work you do, and do you ever worry? I mean, rephrase. Are there dangers in what you do?
To me or to my client?
Yes.
Yes, he says, okay. The dangers for the client are, if the person doing the regression doesn't really know how to do it,
right.
One thing therapists learn is how to sit still when the person speaking is extremely upset. To sit still, be quiet, ask questions, and stay out of the upset. If a person is regressing people and doesn't know how to do that, and a person in the regression gets into an upsetting situation, the regressionist will have a tendency. One person told me she walked out of the room and left because she figured out how to do this from listening to my tape, and walked out of the room and left her friend in a hell of a state, and because she was scared. So there are ways to mess up doing a regression. But
actual danger.
I'm determined to see the session all the way through to the end. If it takes longer than it's supposed to, fine. I'm sticking with it until it's complete.
Okay, actual danger?
Well, the danger is somebody might be upset.
Okay, but you said you don't interfere with somebody being upset if you run into that.
No, if I just keep asking questions, they will work their way through it.
Okay, and tell me where the danger is. In other words, if they're very, very upset and you in some way don't act in the right way, what could happen?
They can get stuck in it.
Oh, truly?
Yeah, they can finish the session and go around feeling quite upset for days or longer.
But it would eventually wear off.
It would eventually wear off, but it would turn the experience into something that I wouldn't want to be responsible for, if I can put it that way.
Sure, you can.
And
really interesting.
It is, because these things can linger after a person's awake and fully conscious. It can linger.
Okay.
If it isn't completed as it should be completed.
All right. Next question is, if you go back into this prior life, and let's just say that it works out well, and the one who said that his wife died and he'll never love another mm-hmm. somehow indicates that it's okay, or they both indicate it's okay, and this person is brought back up.
Right.
Their problem now is cured. And my question is, does it stay cured, or does it, too, as a cure, wear off?
Well, I don't use the word cure, but I do, in some cases, follow up with clients over a period of time. I saw that particular client again 2 weeks later, and he'd already started dating a woman he had known at work for something like 5 years, but he'd never realized that she was really into him, and all of a sudden he was able to take that in, and he was having a good time.
Yeah, but what happens if he gets married, and then a year later it wears off? Sorry.
Well, I've been married a few times, and I know that things can wear off with or without best
life
progression.
There is that. Yes, it's true. But I'm asking, in other words, if this release is found, does that can that wear off as well with the person reverting back to the old problem?
I have not had any reports of that. I've had reports of it staying, of people continuing to be free of it and going on with what they want to do in their life.
So, that thing that you refuse to call a cure sticks, basically. We've got to take we're at a break point. We have to do it. We have no choice. They tell us when we must break, and this is it. My guest is Gregory Paxson. And if I've ever done a fascinating interview, this is it. You're hearing about hypnosis, past life regression, reincarnation. Oh, my, oh, my.
Midnight in the Desert doesn't screen calls. We trust you. But remember, the NSA. Well, you know. To call the show, please dial 1-952-225-5222.
Can't let it happen. Let me try it again. It's too good to let it skip.
Midnight in the Desert doesn't screen calls. We trust you. But remember, the NSA. Well, you know. To call the show, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
All right, I've done decades of interviews. And so I'm telling you, from what? We've been on the air that long, really? An hour and 38 minutes. Gregory Paxson is the real McCoy. And I'm sure most of you can tell he is by now, too. 3,500 clients, 13,000 past life regressions. And I'm asking him all about, well, hypnosis, regression, the nature of reincarnation. And I want to sort of move over there for a moment. The nature of reincarnation is so interesting. Obviously, you know a lot about it, Gregory, the nature of reincarnation, that is to say. And so here come some questions. For example, when you take somebody back into a prior life, are they, if it's an American, somebody from Chicago, let's say, do you generally find an American in a prior life, or do you run into sometimes a Frenchman or a German or a Japanese? I mean, I'm trying to get an idea now that I know that you really are the real thing. Maybe you can answer some of these.
Well, fine. I'm delighted. Answer to your question is there's no particular connection between what country you're in now and what country you were in your last life.
If I had to make a guess about myself, Gregory, and we'll talk about this maybe on another show because we'll be doing another show. I would bet an awful lot of money that in a prior life I was Asian.
Okay.
I just know it. I know it.
I wouldn't dispute that.
And if you could get me under, I bet that's what you'd find out. And I have a million reasons for that, but anyway, I'm going to leave it at that. I spent a great deal of my adult life in Asia, this life, that is to say, living in Asia. So I have an attraction for Asian everything, and it's almost supernatural. I guess that's what we call it.
Well, you notice not everybody has that.
I've noticed. I've definitely noticed, yes.
And you've known people who have attractions to other parts of the world that are pretty strong. And they can't explain it, but they have it.
Right.
So that suggests they have a past life or past lives in that part of the world that have left a powerful impression on them.
Okay, so if you take somebody back and you run into their last life, which happened to be in France, maybe they don't speak English.
I'm sorry, maybe they don't speak English?
Yeah, maybe they don't speak English. If their last life was in France.
Yes.
And they were French.
Yes.
Maybe they don't speak English when you get back to that life.
Oh, I see what you mean. That's speaking a language they don't know in their current life,
uh-huh.
But are speaking well in hypnosis in the regression.
Yes, sir. That's Christian.
That does happen, but it's extremely rare.
Huh.
I belonged for years to what was then called the Association for Past Life Research and Therapy, which was a group started back in the very early 80s by a group of psychologists and psychiatrists in California as a sort of support group for each other, because they were having the experience you started our conversation with of taking a patient back to the source of a problem and finding them describing a previous life.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, they were open to people like me who were not specifically psychotherapists or psychiatrists or psychologists, but might be doing this kind of work. And it provided the opportunity, especially as the membership grew toward 1,000 people all over the world who do regressions, that somebody did a study. And what they found was, by inquiring of all these regressionists, that someone will speak a language they don't know in this lifetime in about 6 out of 10,000 sessions.
Wow. All right, so...
And that comports with my experience. I'll never forget this Oklahoma oil man recalling a lifetime as a very poor Chinese peasant.
Right.
Who marries an unattractive widow because that will add a second oxen to his oxen to pull plows so he could farm more rice and support his family better. And he started speaking Chinese.
Wow. All right.
And
well,
but wait,
but that's only in the minority of cases, you tell me. So
it's a tiny fraction. It's
a tiny fraction. Even better. Okay, better yet, a tiny fraction. So in the rest of the cases, if it's a Chinese person or a Japanese person or a German or whatever, I can only assume that it's your patient translating for you. Otherwise, how does it come out, and is something you can understand?
You've asked a really good technical problem. For the most part, people they're speaking in English because they're speaking through their current body.
Yes.
It's very rare for somebody to revert so deeply into a past life that they're actually speaking as that person so profoundly that they're actually speaking the original language.
Right. So...
My favorite
again.
Is actually a woman who came to me, who is a professional therapist,
yes,
who had a side fascination with ancient Egypt, went on a trip there, a guided trip, and was in a crypt somewhere where she was looking at the hieroglyphics and kind of, I guess, muttering to herself without realizing it, when finally her instructor behind her, the leader of this group, said, "My God, you can read hieroglyphics better than I can, and I've been studying for 10 years. And she said, "Oh, my God, I'm reading this stuff." And that's the reason she came to me. I mean, one thing I love about my practice is that people will show up with wonderful questions like that. How come I can speak, I can read hieroglyphics? In a regression
really
back to ancient Egypt, she spoke ancient Egyptian, which
wow.
I still have on tape, thank God. And It sounded kind of guttural. It was an odd-sounding language.
Okay.
Not like anything we would recognize. But that's one of those rare cases.
All right, so I'm going to move on to a couple of really far-out questions that people want me to ask. And
okay.
You can tell me to, you know, take a hike on these if you want to. But have you ever had clients describe alien abductions?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. The reason I asked this is because most of the abduction people that I've interviewed indicate that alien abductions are pretty much family affairs. In other words, once abducted, many times abducted, even through a lifetime, a complete lifetime, if not beyond. That's the reason I asked. That sort of thought is a general rule of abductions, that it's done right through a lifetime and perhaps many lifetimes.
That has shown up. And I found a way to make them stop. So they don't happen anymore.
So they don't become abducted any longer?
Precisely.
And how does that work?
Well, the abductions are performed by beings who are not in a physical dimension. They may be able to slow their frequencies down enough to present as physical for a short period of time, but they can't hold it. So when they're traveling, they are operating in usually the low mental or high astral dimension. Now, the techniques I learned for getting rid of people's entities or doing battle with them when that's the only way to do it, I applied to the ship of the characters who were abducting my client repeatedly, and I asked her to watch the ship because she described it.
Right.
And I didn't say what I was doing, but I basically hit it up with a particular energy field and spun it in a particular way, and she spontaneously said, "It's on fire. It's burning. It's just empty."
Wow.
And that was the end of the abductions.
Wow.
I didn't tell her what I was doing. I mean, I hate to spoil my own fun.
I am, right.
So I actually went to a abduction support group in suburban Chicago, and she went with me, and with the good news that these abductions could be stopped. And to my surprise, no one there was remotely interested in such a thing.
Huh.
They just wanted to share their pain. And they're welcome to it.
So, I don't know, what do you conclude from that? That that they don't want to give up that experience?
Well, that, you know...
Or that it's fake?
No, I don't think it's fake. I think that's... Look, suburban Chicago is not a place where people are going to parade that around.
That's a good point, yes.
But I think, you know, it's a shared grief, a shared problem, and I guess they just didn't believe me.
Well, nothing
like
it.
The idea that this, I mean, this becomes part of people's identities of who I am, all of our, you know, we all have a personal story of who we are and all we've been through, and it's a whole autobiography that comprises our sense of self. And it probably is the most, you know, dramatic and interesting thing that ever happened to them, even though painful, also interesting, and they just weren't interested in stepping aside from that and being free of it.
Well, what you needed was a lady that you set the ship on fire for, and she just stands up and says, "Look, this guy destroyed their ship. He can do it."
Actually, she did that, and they didn't
seriously?
Want to hear it.
Seriously?
Seriously, yeah. I mean, I went there just to volunteer, you know, my services, if they wanted, you know, to be free of this, because it's that abduction stuff is so offensive to me.
It is. All right,
the fundamental universal law of free will.
Right. Here is a question for you. Mm-hmm. Did you actually, literally set a ship on fire, or did you set the ship on fire in her mind, ending the problem?
Art, all I can tell you is this. I did not tell her what I was doing. She spontaneously described it.
Okay.
However, all I know is that I did what I did, and she described what she described. Is that fact? It was functional in her case because the disturbing things that had been happening stopped happening.
Right, sure.
I did that with another client as well that I recall, and the same effect occurred. So it's 2 out of 2.
Not bad.
But that's all I have to go on because I haven't attracted very many clients who have abduction experiences. There's so much about that I don't understand.
I appreciate the fact that you had any answer at all. So that's really neat. I would kind of guess that, and that's all I'd be doing, is that you somehow did that in her mind, or that's the way her mind managed to deal with the situation once you got her to it. I don't know. There's not answers for everything in the world.
I have at least 2 people there, and in both cases, I didn't say what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
So if it got into her mind by some other means, I'm not quite sure what that might have been.
Right. Here comes another weird one.
He's got better.
Yeah. Well, it sort of makes sense because of what you're dealing with, and that is, have you ever discovered a past life in what you would regard as another dimension? I don't know how you'd know it, but another dimension.
Quite a few.
Whoa. How do you know you're experiencing somebody who's in another dimension? What is it they say about this prior life that lets you understand we're talking about an entire different dimension?
Okay, let me break this down for you really quickly.
Okay.
I heard about something called the involutionary cycle. That's what goes before the evolution starts. The spiritual evolution begins. First, the soul incarnates on a mental planet as many times as necessary to learn conceptuality, a fancy word for my ability to say table, and you and I both know what I'm talking about. Then the soul is ready to incarnate in an astral planet, which looks a lot like a physical planet, to learn desire and feeling. You can't desire a table unless you know what one is, so conceptuality precedes desire.
Okay.
Then when the soul has mastered combining those two, then it's ready to incarnate on a physical planet, which is the only kind of planet where you have to maintain a body temperature and you have to have food and you have to cooperate with others in order to function.
Right.
So people will recall, and this is basically how it goes, and it has been really awkward for me when somebody in a first session describes a past life on an astral planet. It looks like a physical planet, except the colors are often more vivid. And I ask people to describe their bodies, and they look like humans, and they wear clothes. When I ask them to look at their hands, which I always do, and ask them what color is the skin on your hands, and when they say, well, it's white, very white, and then I ask them to count their fingers. If they have more than 5 fingers, I know for sure it's an astral planet.
Good point.
That works most of the time. Another one is I ask them to move to a time when they're traveling somewhere. And then they say, okay. They say, how are you traveling? Well, I'm walking. Okay, please look down at your feet. Can you see your feet? I say, yes.
Uh-huh.
Are your feet touching the ground? No, they're actually not. And I say, well, about how far from the ground would you say your feet might be? And that'll be anywhere from 2 feet to 6 feet. And they're moving along vertically.
Wow.
In a standing position. And then I might ask, are you moving your feet? And most of the time they'll say, well, no. Now, my client at this point is pretty confused. I mean, this is not something they bargained for.
Right. I totally get it. They float. And the next question would be, you know, then what do they need the the legs and the feet for anyway? If they can float everywhere they go, if they're in some sort of dimension where that, where physics are different and they can do that, then I guess it's their own brain projecting the legs and feet.
I don't know that.
Or maybe not.
And I don't know that that's true or not true. Okay?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I fully expect you to say I don't know too, because you can't know it all.
Well, look, I mean, I'm really curious. I'm always curious, or I never would have got to this point. But now, when people describe lives on mental planets, they don't have human forms. They can have any variety of forms. The first time I ever took a client to a lifetime on a mental planet, I was startled. I mean, he was a lawyer for, I'd think, the FHA or something. But this particular, he was sort of a triangle-y shape. And he and his kind were very playful. And he and I laughed our way through that session. It was one of the funniest sessions I ever did.
I'm glad to hear there are places where senses of humor are important or used frequently.
Praise the Lord.
Yes, indeed.
We could use a lot more of that right around here.
Uh-huh. We sure could. Okay, we're coming up on a break, but I'll let you think about it during the break, which is only 2 minutes. But obviously, if you get somebody into a prior life and you happen to jump them back to just before they die, I have heard that people are able to actually describe their deaths. Now, I've done a lot of shows about NDEs and people who have researched near-death experiences. You know the story that they all tell about the light and the long tunnel and all the rest of that. So when we get back, I want to hear about the death experience.
Midnight Matters are best handled by those that understand how to move in the darkness, like Art Bell. To call the show, please dial 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
I bet a lot of you knew that was coming, right? How could I not? My guest is an amazing guy, Gregory Paxson. And he has done tens of thousands of past life regressions. And so, sure, I want to ask him, mixed in all of this is the process coming for all of us, and that's death, right? Again and again and again and again, you keep coming around. Well, if that's true, then surely Gregory has run into a description of people at the moment of their death, which could be, the reason for the trouble in the current life, who knows, but people have described, I'm sure to you, Gregory, death, have they not?
I make a point of it in the regression.
You do?
I do. When we do a regression, the completion of the regression is going to the last day of your life.
Really?
Talking about what your situation is then. And then the moment of your death and what you're experiencing as you come out of your body.
Really?
Then I ask that you look at the body you've just left. And my question is, do you have any thoughts or feelings about that person, yes or no? If the answer is yes, I'll ask what those thoughts or feelings are. Then I'll say, now you're moving to the time when you're exiting the room. It more often than not is through a wall or a ceiling. And then if they're, in most cases, people look up and they see a light. It may be any time of day or night. It doesn't matter. The light is brighter than the sun.
Right. So that is the light people see during NDEs.
When they move into it, though, they don't describe it as a tunnel. They describe it as like a like an escalator or elevator or tractor beam, which is more accurate. And if I ask them to focus intently on the very center of the light,
okay,
they move
you're
faster.
Popping your peas again, so you must have moved your mic.
Okay, thanks. How's this?
Better, thank you.
Thank you. I want it as good as it can get.
Okay.
Then they arrive in a bright light, and I ask them to move to the time when someone greets them.
Right.
Or welcomes them, and someone will at some point, and that being will guide them to a place where they find other beings, and as the person acclimates to the light level, just like we would if we went from the basement out into the bright sun,
yes,
things come into focus, and they can see there are physical-looking beings around them that look like people.
Right.
And then they're... education begins. There may be a great welcome for them or not. That might depend more on the person. And I ask them to go to the time when they review the lifetime that just left. And that usually will involve a guide of some kind. And they can look at the life they just left in terms of what they intended to accomplish before they went into that life.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like coming back from a business trip and sitting down and saying, okay, what did I accomplish that I meant to, and what did I not get done that I meant to?
Okay.
Now, I learned something from this I want to make a real point of, because it goes back to a question you asked about the brain and the new brain.
Yes.
Of a baby. That, you know, I'm working with very Midwestern folks, most of whom have no particular knowledge of, you know, spirituality or metaphysics or any of that New Agey stuff.
Understood.
And yet, when people describe coming out of their bodies, and I ask them to look at their body and answer questions about the room they're in or the situation they're in, it's most often indoors, and then describe exiting the room, they can see without eyes, without a brain, they can think.
Sure.
And without a physical body, they have a sense of location and space.
The soul, yeah.
It's the soul is conscious and capable.
That's incredible.
So, statistically, looking at all of this through all of these sessions, that's not something people can all make up the same way.
No, of course not. And it parallels what a lot of people say about NDEs, so it makes sense.
Yeah, NDEs are different in this sense. A near-death experience typically has a being, an angel or somebody, at the other end of that tunnel who says, oops, no, you got to go back,
uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
So there's a consciousness on the other end of this experience. It isn't just the person having the experience. It's that there are some other beings who know this is going on, and they're ready for them to say, no, you got to go back. So a near-death experience is not the same thing as a death experience, if you follow what I'm saying.
I totally follow, yes.
Okay.
What I would next ask, I think is pretty heavy duty, and that is, do you always have them describe the same thing? Do they always describe the light, or are there ever experiences where the death experience for a certain person sent them to a different, hotter place?
I love it. I have never heard someone describe a different, hotter place.
That's really comforting to hear.
I especially love the medieval paintings of hell and damnation. They're just, unfortunately, they're very grisly. And it's so sad that so many people lived in fear of something that doesn't exist for so many centuries.
Well, it's kept us in line, I guess.
And now, what does happen, though, that's really interesting, is when people come out of their body and instead of going up, they start floating around or wandering around. Sometimes they're in kind of like a fog, like a gray space. More often, they're just kind of floating around, looking around. And if that comes out in the regression, my next suggestion is to go to the first time you see art.
Art?
I picked art because I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Okay? I use the name of the person, of the client.
I get it, right.
And then they'll describe looking, usually looking down, and I'll ask them, you know, where are you looking at them from? A person, very often a child, very often very young, 1 or 2 or 3 years old, but it could be an adult. And then I'll ask them if there's a time when they get closer, and they will say yes. And then I'll also ask, is there something about them that attracted your attention? Yes or no? And there's usually a yes, and some reason is given. In one case, I remember vividly, the answer was, as he looked down at this little 1.5 or 2 year old girl, he said, happy.
Hmm.
He was attracted to her happiness and got into her body and had been riding around with her for, you know, all those years until she was 40 when I did the session with her. But that when that shows up, then the past life the person has described belongs to the entity that's been riding around with them and not to the person I'm working with.
All right. Leads me to another question, and that is, have you encountered entities during a regression? And by entity, I mean a spirit that is other than something that was at any time a human being.
At any time a human being?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
In other words, you know, some people would talk about angels or devils or spirits that never have been human, that do hauntings, that sort of things. Or it, for all I know, they could be aliens or the souls of aliens, but they seem to be very much not human.
There have been some. One was an elf.
Oh, really? An elf?
Who got kicked out of his domain for being annoying and was floating around a hospital recovery room, and my client was a nurse in that recovery room.
Uh-huh.
And the doctor was so full of entities, the elf reported he didn't want to go into that guy, but my client was pretty clear, so he slipped into her. Just needed a place to go. And a lot of entities are literally beings, formerly human or otherwise, who are just looking for a place to hang out. But, you know, it's if somebody has an entity that's pretty neutral, it's still like if you're a radio in a room and suddenly there's another radio in a room playing on a different station, it kind of disrupts the whole situation. You see what I mean?
I do.
And so all of us have very specific and complex frequency systems in our bodies, and to some degree they're individually unique. So when you have another frequency system in your energy field as well, it's disruptive and can have all kinds of effects, generally not good ones.
Thank you for the radio analogy that made it so easy for me.
Good.
All right, look, I have an audience that is going to string me up if I don't answer some calls, because it's just going crazy over here with questions. Maybe I should take a few from the computer, and then we'll open the line so you guys know what the number is, right?
Great.
Go ahead and call. Let me set it up. We have a little system that allows us to automatically answer the phone, so I don't have to sit here and answer it time after time, but okay, lines are open. Let me go to the computer here and ask a few of the questions. They're pummeling me with questions. Have you ever run into anyone who had a past life as an animal? That's from Joy in Santa Cruz.
No.
Really? However, what?
In Aboriginal cultures, someone who was a Native American might attach his spirit after death to an animal like an elk or a reindeer.
Huh.
And share that experience, because the way they hold that, you know, like the Native American tradition of going in
spirit
to the animal and ask if they would sacrifice their life for the tribe before they shoot them or they kill them. So there is that kind of connection. So that can get confused. And occasionally, a human soul after death will attach themselves to an animal, like a porpoise was one story I remember, for a period of time before they realize they don't belong there and they leave.
Okay.
So if somebody guiding the regression isn't on to the possibility, they might think that somebody'd remember a lifetime as an animal.
Okay. No, I get it. All right. Rick has two questions. Have you ever reverted someone? Have you ever taken anybody into a future life?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
The last one I remember was hilarious because it went on for some time. And while in trance, she walked around my flat, which is pretty large, and was marveling, looked out the window and said, "Those are cars. That's what you call cars." I said, "Yeah."
Really?
And walked into my office area, and she was recalling a lifetime in the future of a young man who was, a biochemist, who remarked, "You must be rich." And I said, "How come? You have a lot of paper." I mean, this was just, you know, strange and wonderful stuff.
No, I can easily imagine a future in which paper is rare and just not used and not needed.
Or really expensive, as in this case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we may be headed there now, literally in sort of that transitional period now. So, and another question from Rick also is there an area between lives?
Yes.
Huh. Can you describe anything
about regression? But in some situations, the major part of the regression is after the person died, and they're describing what they're doing in another dimension.
And that would be those dimensions you talked about that build toward another life.
Not necessarily an astral planet, but rather a dimension of being. You know that line of Jesus, "In my Father's house there are many mansions."
Yes.
And how else could he describe this to people who really were working with a very material world? So there, a lot of them are classes and adventures in other dimensions. The distinction is this. When we're in a physical body, what we learn and accomplish stays with us karmically. It becomes part of our permanent being.
Right.
What we learn in other dimensions is only to prepare us for living it out in the physical. So that doesn't stay with us permanently. One reason that people feel a certain spiritual longing is to reconnect with the learning that they accomplished before they came back into their body.
Okay.
Or came back into another body, I mean.
All right. How many people like you, Gregory, are there? I mean, that's actually a question from a listener here on the computer. I've just got screens full of it here. If somebody wants to find somebody who will do regressions as you do, there's you, but how many others? I mean, you're semi-retired, right?
I don't know. I would refer someone to the website for, it's called IARRT, which stands for the International Association for Regression Research and Therapy.
Okay. All right. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm turning you off for just a second to give my audience a talk. The lines are already full. Our national line is area code 952-225-5278. 952-225-5278. There's another way to get to us, and I can see that's filling too, and that is by Skype. In North America, America and Canada, simply call us at MITD51. MITD51. In the rest of the world, outside the country, it would be MITD55. That's MITD55. Okay, that said, if you're ready, I would like to allow some questions. I could have done the whole 3 hours with you without ever opening a phone line, Gregory, but you know, it's a talk show, and it feels selfish. It's just that you're so interesting, and there's so much more we could do that there's another show in you. I can feel it. So let's begin. I've got to let these people ask questions.
Okay, fine.
Amanda on Skype. Hi there.
Hi, Art. Hi, Greg. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just like to give a quick shout-out to all your fans listening on the MITD Facebook fan group.
Yes.
I'm hoping I can get two quick questions in. The first one, you kind of touched on, Art, about if anyone could see their death before it happens. I was wondering, is there any correlation between stories you've heard from your clients of their past lives and any present birthmarks they would have?
Amanda, hold on. I didn't ask that question. So let's ask it. Gregory, is it possible for people to see their own death, you know, before it happens?
Well, Amanda, I guess the answer is yes, but very rarely. And you have to ask, to what purpose?
Yeah.
You're pretty traumatic, I would think.
Okay, go ahead with your question now. That was a new question, so I couldn't let it get by.
No, I just meant, like, was there any correlation, like, if someone had a birthmark and they went back and maybe that was an injury from a past life that, like, physically carried over, is there any correlation?
Well, I guess I'd say might be, but I have probably heard or had that situation arise maybe twice in 38 years. So I wouldn't attach a lot of importance to it.
Okay. And my second question, you said that you kind of inadvertently helped a woman quit smoking. If you really tried, would this not cure maybe a lot of addiction and possibly mental illness, like something like locked-in syndrome, for example?
Like what syndrome?
Oh,
like
locked in. Oh, God.
Something like that?
Yeah. That's a very, very good question. Let me explain.
I don't even know what that is.
I do. Locked in, yes. So here we go. I'm going to give you my version of it. I believe there is a lot of medical information about this. I was reading about it in a science magazine of mine. Scientists now are beginning to believe, medical scientists, that there are many, many more people in this, what's called a locked-in syndrome, which means, from our point of view, these people seem to be in a vegetative state. But unfortunately, in fact, they're aware of everything around them. It's a horrific concept. Is that what you meant, Amanda?
That's exactly what I meant. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Amanda, for the call. That's a locked-in state, and it's a pretty horrific idea, if you think about it, Gregory. In other words, from the hospital's point of view, you're in a coma, right? Can't feel anything, can't hear anything. Brain waves seem pretty flat, but in fact, a lot of these people are locked in. In other words, fully conscious in this horrible state where you can't communicate in any way. That's what she's talking about.
I have no experience with that.
Can you
I can't
imagine?
Really address the question except to say that it would be interesting to have the opportunity. I mean, it would put the detective in me up to everything I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I don't have any direct experience of it.
Good enough. Good answer. And I don't expect you to reach out and try and explain things that you haven't run up against. And that would be a strange one, but the science magazine I'm reading is now suggesting there are a lot more people in this so-called locked-in state than we imagine. It's pretty horrible to contemplate. Let's go to the phones and
I do have a comment about that.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Probably, if I were addressing that problem with someone without knowing anything else about the situation, they're probably ready to leave their body and go back into the light.
Oh, yeah.
Something is holding them back. Now, if I were to be present in a medical situation and the outcome of my presence was that they died, that would be really awkward for me.
Indeed.
So, or any other person who did that. So you see, the medical idea is to keep somebody in any semblance of life form remaining.
Of course.
It's a complete competition with what's good for that soul.
Of course. You've heard of the Learjet, right?
Of course.
Okay. The son of the man who created the Learjet is John Lear.
Okay.
And I interviewed John on many, many occasions about topics like this, and something he said, here we go, folks, has stuck with me forever. And probably will always be with me, Gregory. It's one of those things you can't unthink. He said, Art, when you die, don't go to the light. It's a trick. Go to the darkness. Gregory.
That's amazing.
Why?
I don't know what's possessing the man who said that, but I don't think it's a good thing.
Oh, well, I'm actually gratified to hear you say that, not about John, but about the whole concept, because once you hear that from somebody yes. who says it authoritatively, it's always going to put you in doubt. I mean, we all think, oh, death, I'm dying, go to the light, definitely go to the light. And someone comes along and says, it's a trick, go to the darkness. You know, what to do with that, right? All right, now to the phones. Very quickly, let's go to the
phones. Can I come in on that?
You can. All right, go ahead. Caller, hold on. Go ahead.
There is such a thing as the dark realms.
Oh.
I've explored it extensively. One of my majors in college was anthropology. And I've interviewed any number of those beings. And one thing that keeps them there is that they're taught that the light is dangerous. And evil.
Oh, really?
And they will get inside people's bodies. And it sounds like, with no reflection on John Lear, that he was channeling one of those dark beings who would say something like that.
All right. Well, a while ago I asked you about, you know, a hot place. That would have been a great time for you to say, no, there's not a hot place, but there are dark realms.
I stand corrected. Okay. There's not a hot place, but there are dark realms.
Yeah.
And it's not that people get sent there.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've done a couple of regressions where people describe dying in some rather unfortunate circumstance and being kidnapped and dragged into the dark realms. And they go through a whole process. Both people described it the same way, and it's not pretty. Of being converted into one of those beings. But by and large, and who knows, I mean, I'm only working with the people who came to me, who are usually, you know, one of my rules is they have to be able to walk into my office on their own, you know, without assistance. How did I learn that?
Hmm. All right, look,
so I don't know how that works, but, you know, there is, you know, the ancient idea going back to Zoroaster and throughout Judeo-Christian and Islamic teaching that there is a battle in heaven between the light and the dark.
Mm.
And my evidence is that's true.
Oh,
and a lot of
so
it goes
many,
on Earth.
I could do so many hours with you. This poor person, hello there, caller, are you there? Come on, caller. Hello, going once. Going twice.
That one ran for it.
No, they're there. I know they are. Hello, caller?
Oh, okay.
Caller?
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you. Hallelujah.
Awesome. Awesome. Way to go. Listen, Art, I've been a fan of yours for a few years. I started listening to it on YouTube, and it's a big honor to be able to talk to you tonight.
Thank you.
Wonderful to hear you back. I've got two questions for your guest, if that's okay, and I'm trying not to hold them up too long.
Go.
First one is it possible for you to remember your past lives when you're asleep, when you're in a deep sleep? Because if you keep remembering the same dream, is that an indication of a past life?
Hmm.
And the second one is that when you come out of them, if you remember them clearly and you always remember them, is that, again, another indication that they are past lives?
The answer is yes.
Well, okay. That makes some sense to me. That makes some sense.
I mean, many clients have come to me because of dreams mm-hmm. of past incarnations and some mm-hmm. of a situation in a past incarnation that they keep having this dream about over and sometimes for years. And when I ask them to go back to the source of the dream, they describe not only what's in the dream, but everything that happened before and after. Hmm. And then that clears it up and they stop having the dreams. Because they're usually not fun dreams.
Okay, because I've always had the same dream that I've had for a long time. I've had three different drowning dreams, one of which is in a time that I think is in the future, but I'm not sure. But I know two for a fact are in the past. And I was and listening to you tonight, I was wondering if that's an indication of something. I don't know, so. I don't want to hold this line too much, Art. I know other people want to talk.
Oh, yeah, it's really Jim. Thank you for the call. And we're not going to have time to really answer this, but drowning dreams. Boy, yeah, I bet that's an indication of something. We'll find out. Maybe the other side isn't so scary, huh? What do you think? I'm Art Bell.
A dialogue sequence with Art Bell, please coordinate your phalanges and call 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
You know, this interview is so good that it's ruined all future interviews about the same stuff for me. That's how good this is. It's just ruined. How am I ever going to do one to live up to this? A lot of people asking on computer and otherwise, Gregory, if people can learn to do regressions themselves.
They can, and I can, but I can't, like, maintain the focus for more than 5 or 10 minutes, which is not long enough.
Uh-huh.
What I tell my clients is this. I'm driving the car so you can look at the scenery. You know, it's a division of labor.
Uh-huh.
When you're driving the car and looking at the scenery at the same time, have you ever driven through the Rocky Mountains? I'm sure you have.
I have.
A lot of people have, and there's some incredible scenery, but you better watch the road.
Well, that's a fact.
So that's what I can say about that.
Okay. All right.
When I want to explore a past life, I have someone regress me. I don't try to do it myself because I need an hour and a half or 2 hours to really get into it and savor the whole thing.
Yeah, it makes complete sense to me. On Skype, Chaz, you're on the air with Gregory. Hi.
Hey, Art. This is Chaz calling from Vegas again.
Yes, sir.
Quick two questions. Is there a limit to how many past lives someone can have? And have you ever run into somebody who doesn't have any past lives?
Oh, good questions, both.
Thanks,
both.
Chaz.
Well, I don't know what the limit is because... You know, I'm guessing that most of us have at least 1,000 past lives.
Huh.
And I was fortunate to recall an experience of being, before I ever had a body, where I was being trained for my particular soul function. And some souls are trained to a specific function before they ever incarnate, even on a mental planet, let alone a physical planet.
Yes.
That's a conversation for another time, I think.
Surely, every now and then, you'd run into a new soul. I mean, you know, a first incarnation. Maybe not frequently, but I bet it would eventually happen.
The only one I remember is an extraterrestrial guy who flew his ship into the Earth. It made a corkscrew motion, and he next described being born into a physical body. And that was his last lifetime.
Huh.
And in his current life, at the age of 31, he was the tech vice president of a major corporation in Chicago that would be familiar to anyone.
Cool.
He couldn't make it to his second regression because he and some fellow executives had gone to the top of the skyscraper where their office was, and the door blew shut, and they were locked up there, so he couldn't come back the second time.
Wow. All right. Michelle, all the way over in Japan. I know she's in Japan. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you? I'm in a restaurant, so hopefully it's not too loud.
You're in the middle of a restaurant? Okay.
Yeah, because I'm on the way back from the post office. And real quickly, I'll tell you this. In your break, you had a news story about the coral dying out. And I thought it was really funny because right now I'm having my students do a video project where they have to make a one-minute TV commercial about saving coral in Okinawa. So it was just really kind of an interesting coincidence to me.
Synchronicity. Yes.
So my question is, I'm hoping perhaps you can answer a question that I've had for a long time, and I'll make it quick, but it's kind of two parts. The first part is, do you have any knowledge of how past life experiences relate to transgender transgender experiences? And if so, would you ever regress someone that's transgender and try to figure out if there's any cause for it? Or do you find that that's perhaps too dangerous?
I would gladly. I think I've only had two clients who are transgender.
Michelle, I'm going to have to ask you, hold on, just a moment. Michelle, I'm going to have to end it. You've got too much noise in the background.
Yeah, I can listen in, no problem.
Okay, thank you. Michelle is transgender, and she lives in Tokyo and teaches. That's the reason for the question.
Okay, well, I've worked with a couple of transgender people who at least confess to it. I don't know if I've worked with others. They're human beings like everybody else.
Sure.
I don't think there's a formula for explaining that phenomena. I haven't worked with enough people to have any kind of, line of points that give me an indication about, is that karmic? Is that the effect of an entity? Is that, what is the function or purpose of it? I don't know.
Karmic. It would be an interesting regression indeed, wouldn't it?
It would. I think, this is a point I think is worth making. The kind of research that we have about past lives, like mine, is done by practitioners who are making a living doing this.
Mm-hmm.
There is no research money that makes possible exploring questions like this. So we simply learn what we can from the clients that we have.
Right. And again,
so I think this is a critical question about the nature of humanity, and there is no funding to explore it.
And I really, when you don't know, I want you to say that you don't know or haven't explored it yet, because then I know you're on the up and up, and I do know you're on the up and up. This is the single most fascinating program on the subject that I've ever done in my career, and I've done a lot of them. Gregory, so that says a lot, trust me. Michael, on Skype, you're on the air with Gregory. Hi.
Mega Roswell's Art. I'm Michael from Virginia.
Okay.
Gregory, have you ever had a client that, rather than regressing, had a progression that described a future life? Also, could you elaborate on the client or clients that said describing transforming themselves into demons? Thanks, Art, and shout out to the weirdos at Belgab.
Okay. So we kind of answered the first one already, right? The first one, future lives. Yes. The answer is yes. Yeah. And with regard to the demons, transforming to demons.
That's not what I said.
Right.
People who have died and are drawn into the darkness are put through a process of being changed into a low level dark being, like a private in an army. And they're not demons. Demons are very specific things that I've encountered very rarely, because they're the ones who swear and spit and cry and make a lot of noise.
Right.
Dark beings don't do that. So when people talk about demons, that's usually like something out of a fundamentalist church, where they think that any kind of negative presence in someone is a demon, which is complete nonsense. Demons are very specific, and it's really tough to have a conversation with one.
Bet.
I mean, I learned about entities by interviewing them through my client when they're in trance. So I want to know how they affected my client, how they got there, what they want them to do or not do, the whole thing, so that I and my client are both learning how they've been affected.
So I suppose if you ask a demon how he's feeling today, you get something like...
and a string of profanities. The last time that happened, I was working with a client on a warm afternoon. And he outweighed me by 100 pounds, and he was in the recliner, and the screaming and spitting and yelling and cursing started, and it got louder and louder, and I suddenly realized this guy could be a handful if he gets out of that chair. Then I realized I've got neighbors. I'm in the city, right? The next thing I know, I may have a couple cops at the door, because it sounds like murder is happening in my place.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to have a real handful if I've got this guy screaming and spitting in my hypnosis room, and the cops show up at the door.
Yeah, I could see you trying to explain that to a couple of Chicago cops. I got this guy into another lifetime.
I stopped asking questions and got rid of the demon, and that was the end of it.
They'd keep you busy for 72 hours, guaranteed.
At least.
At least, yes. Hello there on the phone. You're on the air with Gregory.
Hi, Gregory. Hi, Art. I was just curious. Have you ever come across people with parallel lives going on at the same time? Like, like awake in one life, then you go to sleep and you're awake in another life, and there's like a dual multiverse going on at the same time.
Man, that's a great question, and we are almost out of time. Parallel lives have really, for a long time, I couldn't make any sense of them, and I finally got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I remembered a parallel life myself, who died when I was, 20-something, but whose life had a big influence on mine. I'll try to make this simple.
Wait, start with what a parallel life is.
A parallel life is another incarnation of your own oversoul who is living in a body in some other place.
Okay.
You're not supposed to meet them. I did have one client who did. His story was so inexplicable. That's why he came to me in the first place. Uh-huh. And in a regression, he described from the point of view of the other incarnation, who was this old Cambodian guy, meeting this young blonde American in this refugee camp. My client was a guy in the financial business who sold investment programs to people with an annual income of $1 million or more, who'd made a lot of money, and for some reason he couldn't understand. He went to Cambodia, worked in the camp, gave them all his money, and he still didn't know why.
Mm.
And in the regression, this old Cambodian dude is driving a truck through this camp and picks up this blonde guy who's a hitchhiker, and he describes my client. And then he describes feeling this amazing tingling all over his body, and then my client woke up out of trance with his eyes wide open and said, "What was that?"
I so get it. And yes, you're not supposed to meet that person and realize
right.
it.
Right? Right.
Wow.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's a whole separate discussion, too.
It gets really, it's pretty easy for me to describe, but I don't know if I can project the image enough for your listeners to grasp it.
Okay. Lloyd, your turn with Gregory. Hi. Hello, Lloyd. Going once, going twice. I know Lloyd's there because I can hear the radio in the background, but he's obviously wandered away, so tough luck, Lloyd. Better luck next time. Let's go to the phones, and you're on the air with Gregory Paxson. Hi.
Is this me?
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, my goodness. Hello.
Hello.
Nice to speak to you. Anyways, I wanted to talk to your guest about a certain dream I had about a death I had once. And if, I don't know. I'm nervous, I guess.
Just relax. A dream. You had a dream about a death. Is that right?
Right. And I was wondering if he could possibly match it up with a different description of death he's gotten before. Anyways, a thing happened in my dream, and I was no longer alive. And I just immediately was overwhelmed with a very calm feeling, immediately followed by this feeling of just this great expansion, just like this ever-expanding feeling. It just felt like I was a million miles wide. And then I woke up.
Okay.
Makes sense to me.
Maybe it's not that weird. It was just weird because I had the dream.
Well, it sounds like you had a really nice experience. And while people describe death in a pretty similar way, there are always outliers and variations.
Hmm.
And it sounds like you, in your dream, you experienced an outlier or a variation. Whether that's an actual experience, we could determine if we did a regression, because sometimes dreams play all kinds of wonderful tricks on us.
Dreams obviously are not always meaningful in some future or past life way. A lot of times dreams are about your current life, something that happened to you when you were younger or you were in college or you were working, or I know because I have them all the time. So,
well, also, when we're sleeping, our astral bodies, which like to play or have fun or explore things, will leave our physical bodies and go flying around and go into all kinds of astral places
and all kinds
of things happen. And then sometimes when we get up in the morning, our astral body isn't back, so we feel a little out of place or have a hard time pulling ourselves together.
Okay, let's squeeze one more in if we can. Hello there, you're on the phone with Gregory. Hello? Going once, going twice.
Hello.
You are there, hello.
Hello.
Okay, sir, we don't have a lot of time, so if you have a question, go ahead.
Yeah, real quick, Art, good to have you back on the air.
Thank you.
I had a dream one time. It was like it was real. I woke up, got ready to go to work, walked downstairs from my apartment, got into my car, saw that the dashboard was completely bent in like a 90 degree angle. Realized my stereo had been stolen and speakers in the back of my car. And anyway, then I woke up and I realized, oh, this is a dream. So I got up and I got ready to go to work, walked downstairs, and my car had been broken into.
Okay. So he had a precognitive dream, Gregory. Ever heard of that?
Yes. Of course.
Of course.
That happens. I mean, our consciousness is much more flexible and interesting than we can yet prove scientifically. But anecdotally, we have a lot of evidence that people are able to have all kinds of precognitive experiences, and they do.
You know, Gregory, if anybody I've ever talked to should have written a book, it's you. Why haven't you written a book?
You know, that's a question I've asked a lot, and I don't have a good answer for it.
Yes, but you have so much knowledge about this subject, so very much knowledge, more than I've ever heard anybody articulate ever, that, you know, you're my age. Before you have your next incarnation, you really ought to jot down some notes on this one.
Thank you very much.
It has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and I hope you will come back and be here again, because we need you.
Art, that's an amazing and lovely thing for you to say. Thank you.
Just say you'll come back.
I'll be delighted. I really have enjoyed this conversation with you, and it's been great.
Thank you, my friend. Good night. Wow. In this category, classic, classic, classic. Amazing interview. Just absolutely amazing. Gregory Paxson from Chicago. We'll have him back. And by the way, Abby Normal did not make an appearance tonight. I think I'll leave what I've got on the floor and see what happens. In all 25 time zones out there, from the high desert. Good night.